Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC Studios, I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast. It's Thursday, June 1st. It's the first day of Pride Month, and we'll start by turning to a term that many of you have heard by now and turning it on its head. Even if you don't know any trans people, you've probably heard the term gender dysphoria, right? The National Institutes of Health defines gender dysphoria as a marked incongruence between a person's experienced or expressed gender and the one they were assigned at birth. Wikipedia defines gender dysphoria as the distress a person experiences due to that mismatch. The Cleveland Clinic website notes that many insurance companies require you to submit specific documentation of consistent gender dysphoria before they will cover a gender-affirming surgery. So in an oversimplified nutshell, that's gender dysphoria. And many of you, even with no trans folks in your life, probably had at least heard that term and had a vague sense of what that is. But let's turn that term and the distress that comes with it on its head, because there is also such a thing as gender euphoria. You all know what euphoria is, that feeling of extreme happiness and elation and joy that I hope everyone listening right now has experienced at least sometimes in your life. And if you do a Google search for gender euphoria, you'll find millions of hits. One of the first to come up, the website Healthline, which defines gender euphoria as feeling right in your gender. When you can look at the way your gender is presented and received and feel happiness or joy. So as we begin our Thursday Pride Month series here on the show, amid all these laws and policies being passed in all these states trying to erase non-binary and trans people in one way or another, we will talk about those hate laws some of the time and gender dysphoria some of the time. But let's start on the idea of gender euphoria, feeling right in the way your gender is at least presented and sometimes, hopefully, perceived. We'll invite your gender euphoria calls in a minute, and we're very happy to have two guests for this. Imara Jones is back with us, a former journalist in residence at WNYC's The Green Space, a Peabody and Emmy Award winner. She is the creator of Translash Media, which includes the Translash podcast with Imara Jones and much more. She was also on Mayor Bill de Blasio's New York City Commission on Gender Equity. Also with us, Tuck Woodstock, whose bio page starts with journalist, educator, audio producer, and alleged former mayor of Portland. What? Maybe we'll find out about that alleged former mayor status. But actually, he's based in Queens and is probably best known as host of the award-winning podcast Gender Reveal. He has also consulted for This American Life and many other productions. So, Imara, welcome back to the show. Tuck, welcome, and welcome both of you back to WNYC.
Thank you so much for having
me. Thanks for having
me. It's an honor.
Tuck, would you be okay starting us off by describing gender euphoria, either as a journalist, an educator, or in personal terms about yourself?
Sure. I mean, honestly, I think you did a great job explaining it, Brian. But as you said, we hear so much about gender dysphoria, this dissonance between how we're feeling or maybe how other people are treating us and the gender we know ourselves to be. And gender euphoria is simply the feeling of all of these things going right for us. And I think that people who aren't trans, because they might not experience the same levels of gender dysphoria, don't feel these same levels of gender euphoria. But when you're used to having a hard time being seen as your gender, either by yourself or others, these moments where everything finally aligns and feels right can be really, really powerful. So something you may have seen if you're on TikTok or other social media will be, for example, photos of someone who has just had a gender-affirming surgery, revealing the results of those surgeries for the first time. That can be a huge moment of elation, but it can be little things too. So, for example, yesterday I had to go get passport photos taken at the place on my block who, you know, takes the photos, and the guy was kind of insinuating to me that I might want to fix some stuff about my appearance. He kept kind of being like, do you want to fix your hair? Is your face okay? And I got my photo. I'm like, no, I look great. And I was comparing that photo to the photo I took 10 years ago for my passport. And it really did bring me a lot of joy to see those photos in comparison. And I just thought the photo that was taken for my passport, which is so silly, really made me feel exactly like who I am. So that could be just a small moment of gender euphoria.
Yeah, nice description. Mara, same question. Gender euphoria, is it more than just the absence of dysphoria?
I think for me, and of course, you know, my experience is individual and unique, because one of the amazing things about trans people in our community is how broad and diverse it is. But for me personally, what I can say is, I think it was the day that I didn't wake up having to think about my gender. And for me, it wasn't necessarily a balloon drop, but it's to say this feeling of, you know, crossing a threshold in that way, marked by some celebratory moment. It was really when I began to notice that I wasn't thinking about my gender anymore, and I wasn't second guessing myself, and other people were starting to interact with me in a way that was consistent with the way I've always been inside of myself. And so I think for me, it was much more of a quiet revolution. You know, it's kind of like that Jill Scott Heron quote where the revolution isn't seen, right? It's because it starts in the mind. And for me, that was much more the place that I remember being. That's how I experienced gender euphoria, is the ability to live and to be as myself in the way that I've always been.
Tuck, do you think it's important to acknowledge and publicly discuss gender euphoria as a thing, because it's real and there's so much discussion of gender dysphoria in the media, some of which is supportive, but which still makes it sound like being trans comes mostly with distress, not also with a lot of joy?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, you said it so perfectly already, but I think that folks who maybe don't know a lot of trans people and are just hearing about us in the news are hearing so much about us suffering and being persecuted and generally having a bad time. And it's true that trans people are generally having a bad time right now because of laws that are being passed attacking us across the country. But being trans includes so many moments of joy, both personally and by building community. And as Amara said, also just the joy of realizing that you don't have to wake up and think about your gender anymore, because you've gotten to a place where that's not the biggest problem in your life. You actually feel good and you can move on to having hobbies. And so I think it's really important to talk about the fact that trans kids and trans adults can be not just surviving, but absolutely thriving, especially when we are allowed to live as the genders that we are without fear of persecution, because it's this reminder that if we're seeing all these depictions of sad or struggling trans folks, it's not because being trans is inherently negative or sad or hard. It's really just because of the way that society is treating us. And when left to our own devices, we're having a great time. And, you know, not to plug my own work, but I host this podcast, Gender Reveal, in which trans people talk to each other. And we very rarely talk about the type of laws that are being passed. And we really try to focus on other parts of our lives. And it's such a treat to just get to talk to each other about the things that we're passionate about or that make us happy without having to focus on all of the struggles and the dysphoria of it all. So I really appreciate you centering that as well to a larger audience.
And here's Rachel in Philadelphia with a gender euphoria call, I think. Rachel, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling in.
Hello, Brian. Thank you very much for doing the segment. I'm going to make this really brief, because this is one of those things I've been dying to say every time you've done a segment, and unfortunately I haven't been able to ring through. The moment of my euphoria after decades of dysphoria was the night before my surgery, 35 years ago, when I said Kaddish for my old self.
You said Kaddish for your old self. And for people who don't know, Kaddish is the Jewish prayer for the dead. Thank you very much for your call. That was wonderful. I hope you get through again.
Yeah.
Please call us again. Thank you very, very much. And we're going to go right to, I think, another gender euphoria story from Meg in Bordentown in New Jersey, south of Trenton there. Hi, Meg. You're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for having me. Long-time listener, first-time caller. So yeah, for me, gender euphoria is, for me, the first moment I felt it was, I'm a trans woman, and the first time someone looked at me, it was in a store, and I was presenting, and someone looked at me and said, "Can I help you, ma'am?" And I know that sounds unbelievably trivial, but the fact that someone saw me for who I am, and I didn't have to invite it, that was so, so powerful. You know, there's a place and an importance in making these sorts of things and pronouns explicit, but sometimes it's really just nice to be seen for who you are. And it's something I wanted to sort of add is for, you know, cisgender listeners who maybe aren't familiar with this concept, you've experienced gender euphoria. When you lean into something that's associated with, or you associate, I should say, with mm-hmm. the gender you were assigned at birth, like, you know, you, a guy with sports or a woman with sports for that matter, or, you know, someone who, you know, you were a great girl boss at work today. You, like, you did a great thing as a woman. That's gender euphoria too. We just don't necessarily always name it that because it just seems so obvious that you should feel good about it.
Yeah, so it doesn't come to your awareness like being a majority of many kinds in your society that just feels like normal. It doesn't even feel like a thing. It's the people who are in the minority in one way or another who realize, because they walk around being othered in so many ways, that there are even those differences. So thank you very much for that, Meg. Amara, what are you thinking as you listen to either of those calls?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, for me, it's the quiet moment, right? And that's what we just heard. And I think that, you know, one of the things that gets lost in the, again, the manufactured debate about who we are and then the strong feelings that are unleashed as a result is the fact that we are human beings, right? And that for most human beings, no matter, you know, who you are, a lot of your life is about the quiet, boring moments that no one ever sees. And for me, I know that a lot of those quiet, boring moments were always tormented. And the ability to be able to live without that torment is something that I can't put a price on. And it's hard to describe it unless you've ever experienced it. And it left you. And I just wanted to also say, excuse me, to Rachel experience that entire thing of, like, you know, the older that I got and the more that my body changed, the more that the world began to interact with me with the gender that I was assigned at birth, the more and more distant I actually felt from the world. And I felt that there was like this Russian doll effect where there was a person inside of a person, and that people were seeing the exterior, but there was something that was so much profound and so much deeper that began to be more and more hidden away. And that the entire process of transition is about removing those layers so that the world can actually see you for who you are. And that for me is gender euphoria, for us to be able to see the brilliance and the beauty and even the banality of every single individual human being without the layers that we heap upon them. And I think that that's what everybody wants. And for trans people, that task is just so much greater.
Tuck, I'll admit my own bias here, I guess, as a straight cis man. I've been steeped in feminism enough to think that generally women are maybe a little more whole than men, and that's a generalization, so take it for what it's worth. But I came to believe long ago that it's more likely that a woman can be strong and be a provider quite easily, some of the things we identify with masculinity traditionally, but also tend to be more relational, more cooperative, less competitive. And so maybe more whole in more cases, the way that humanity has evolved, and men have a lot of work to do. So again, as a generalization, and not to overstate it, but we talk about toxic masculinity for good mm-hmm. reason. There really isn't toxic femininity in the mm-hmm. same way, I don't think. It's not a term in the lexicon. So in the context of gender euphoria, what is it about being a man that makes you feel good and proud about that?
Totally. Oh my gosh, no, I'm so glad you asked. I mean, everything you're saying is true, and I think that's what's such a delight about being a trans guy, is getting to carry all of the lessons we learned from being, you know, socialized as women, being taught the lessons that girls are taught, experiencing what it's like to be perceived as a girl by men. And in fact, something that I've noticed now that I'm being read as a man by other people is that men are so much nicer to random men than they are to random women. And it is like messed up that like an experience that I can have of gender euphoria is just a guy being nice to me at the coffee shop. But it really is true. And that's not why I transitioned. Like, that's not something that I knew would happen. But it really has been bizarre to see the way that men act and treat men compared to women and other people.
And I'll admit being a little surprised by that, because I would think, you know, traditionally men, what's the word? I'm trying to think of a word. There's a word, but it means, you know, that men are going to treat women with a certain deference.
Chivalry
is exactly the word. And, you know, if you're talking about strangers online in a coffee shop or something like that.
Totally.
But your experience is the opposite.
I think that as women or people who are being perceived as women, we're used to being a little bit suspicious of men, and with good reason. So if a man was being chivalrous or nice to me and he was perceiving me as a woman, I might be thinking, okay, what is his motivation here? What does he want from me? And I wouldn't really be able to trust it at face value. Whereas a guy is just being nice to me as a guy, I'm like, okay, he's not trying to do anything weird, you know? So I think that's the difference, is this level of sort of safety. And again, that's not the reason that I would transition, but it is a good feeling, I have to say, to get to move into the world and feel less like I'm looking over my shoulder at all times, for at least one reason. Now I just have to do it for being trans, but you know, there's always something.
Here's a Trans 101 question coming in from a listener via text. The question is, cis straight white guy here, question about refrain. Sorry, that's not the text I thought I was going to. Here it is. My Trans 101 question. My son reports most of the kids in his high school are LGBTQ, of whom many are trans or non-binary. This seems like a great increase from the past. Why are the numbers going up so much? Are people just more open about who they are? And I'll just say, he wrote it as, my son reports most of the kids in his high school are LGBTQ. I imagine it's not most, but Amara, it's still the premise of the question. The numbers seem to be going up so much. A generation ago, most people may have known gay and lesbian people, but not trans and non-binary people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just also want to echo the sentiments of concern about Queen Jean. And her arrest yesterday. I think that one of the things that we have to realize, and this is one of the things that I've spent a lot of time reporting on over the last year and a half, and this is a hard thing for people to understand, but that our very conversation, the conversation that we have about trans people, is actually heavily shaped by an intentional disinformation campaign by the Christian Nationalist Movement. And one of the ideas that they have deliberately released into the bloodstream of our culture and conversation is this idea of trans contagion, specifically amongst young people. The idea of rapid onset gender dysphoria, that there's kind of a popcorn effect where one person is coming out and then all these other kids are saying that they're trans as a way to be distinct, and all the rest of it. And we know that that entire concept is based on totally debunked and discredited science, and now is pseudoscience. But because it seems an easy answer for why there are more trans kids now than ever that we know about, it's really been picked up and embraced. And the problem is that it's leading to trans kids to be harmed because their parents are believing that this is a quote phase, close quote, and are denying them care. And it's increasing the harm, including the suicidality of trans kids who don't get this care. And I think it's a very easy answer, Brian. I think that, you know, over the last 10 years, and it really is over the last 10 years, people who have been born are able to see trans people in the world and in society. That's certainly not something that I saw growing up in the 80s. And you didn't even see that even if you were a kid in the early 2000s. It's really past 2014 where there's been trans people who are visible. And once you're visible, you're able to say, oh, I know who that person is. That person is like me. And that leads to your journey of self-revelation. Look, we know that trans kids are still in the very low single digits in this country, and just statistically. And so if you see it going from 0.5% to 1%, it seems like an explosion because it's doubled, but it's still, you know, extremely, extremely small number of people in terms of being a minority. And I think that what we have to do is to understand that the world is opening, the world is changing, and what was brutally repressed and erased in even harsher terms is less so. And that small crack in our society is what is allowing more trans kids to say, this is who I am, and to be seen. And I think that it's not new. We're not new. The only thing that's happened is that trans kids now have created a space for themselves where they're able to say, this is who I am, so please accept me.
And
if
listeners,
I could just say very quickly, anecdotally.
Real quick, Duck. Real quick.
Yeah, so quick. I went to high school like 15 years ago, and no one was gay, no one was trans. That was simply not allowed socially. Now, so many of my peers are also queer or trans, and we really were queer or trans the whole time, but we just did not have the space to know that about ourselves and know that about each other. And so it's not that these kids are gay or transer than us. It's just that we didn't have that space, but we grew up to be queer and trans anyway. That's all I wanted to say.
That's exactly right.
And listeners, that's our segment for the first day of Pride Month. We will be centering trans and other LGBTQIA+ identities in this weekly Thursday series as the month goes on. For now, our great thanks to Amara Jones, creator of Translash Media, including the Translash podcast with Amara Jones, and Tuck Woodstock, host of the podcast Gender Reveal, among many other things. Thank you both so much. Happy Pride.
Thank you so much.
Happy
Pride, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.